Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
It is better to be truthful and good than to not.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
True.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Travis.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case, keep your eyes open and watch the road. And, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
Thank you.
And today, we are going to talk about the 2004 movie Layer Cake, directed by Matthew Vaughn. And I just want to, interrupt you first of all. Let's just explain, or I would just want to explain that this is a very dense movie. I had not seen this before two nights ago, and let me tell you, we're going to spoil it. So I would highly recommend, if you have not seen this movie, go out and find a copy of this movie and watch it, because it's well worth seeing. It's got a cast, an all-star cast, and it's a very clever movie. So I'm just telling you right now, if you've downloaded the podcast, that's all I require. I just want the download numbers. As small as they are, make a difference. By the way, we added Venezuela as the 42nd country.
Wow.
But,
Venezuela.
Yeah. So, anyway, watch this movie, because we are going to spoil it, and because it's too good not to spoil. I will try not to fall into the trap of describing a scene and saying, that was awesome. But it's going to be hard.
Yeah, it will be. But this is, it's a little piece of history, because, you know, if you're interested in some of the early works of the director Matthew Vaughn, who's doing huge movies nowadays, and the current Bond, this is a good movie to go back and look at, because you can kind of see the star-making beginnings of everything here.
Oh, yeah. After seeing this movie, I realized why they cast him as Bond. In fact, I think in this movie, his character gave me a lot more Bond than Bond did in Casino Royale, at least.
Right. I think you and Jason talked about the whole point of Casino Royale is he wasn't quite Bond yet.
Yeah. So, anyway. Yeah, well, yeah, let's talk about Matthew Vaughn for a second, because I did not recognize the name, but looking at his credentials, they are impressive. He directed Stardust, Kick-Ass, and X-Men First Class, and he wrote the screenplay for Stardust, Kick-Ass, X-Men First Class, and he produced Snatch, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, and Harry Brown, among other movies.
So, I really like Stardust. That was such a weird movie. I would not have guessed it was the same person who did Layer Cake, Kick-Ass, and X-Men First Class. But he also has another movie coming out next year, Kingsman: The Secret Service, which is getting a really good buzz.
The other thing I like about him, again, only going by his credentials, he hires his friends. I mean, his friends are good actors, but a lot of these people we're going to talk about in this movie show up in all the rest of his movies.
Oh, and he may or may not have fathered January Jones's child.
Oh, get that down. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is going to be a dense movie, and There's going to be also, because there are so many actors that have so many credentials, I'm going to tangent off a little bit into them. But like I said, I guess warning over, strap in, because we're going to spoil a bunch of stuff. And also another thing, there's clips that I put in the podcast. The first clip and the last clip are edited. Just basically the pauses and some of the extraneous things, because he gives a very nice narration in the beginning that gives you all the exposition you need to know about his character to start with. And then the end, he sums it up pretty nicely.
Yeah, he's a good narrator. I guess I have a question for you about this movie.
Okay.
What kind of movie is this?
I think it's
a very specific kind of movie, but I haven't been able to articulate it to myself. It's not a heist movie, but it has a lot of the elements of a heist movie. I've come up with it's a shit keeps going wrong movie.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I wanted to get your take on it.
Well, the first word that would come to mind is caper, like a caper movie. But it's not strictly based on, like, yeah, I guess I wouldn't call it a heist movie either. But yeah, it's definitely a shit keeps going wrong movie. It's like Clerks in the fact that Dante is always like, I wasn't even supposed to work today.
Right. Yeah.
And the fact that, well, I mean, I guess we'll get into it. Should we just dive into the plot?
Let's.
Okay. There's this opening montage exposition that, like I said, it's probably 3 or 4 minutes edited.
When I was born, the world was a far simpler place. It was all just cops and robbers. But it wasn't for me. Then came the summer of love. Hashish and LSD arrived on the scene. There were villains locked away for 12 years for robbing a bank of 10 grand. Doing time with drippy hippies who were doing 12 months for smuggling 2 million quid's worth of puff. I mean, work it out, mate. We're in the wrong fucking game. Drugs changed everything. Always remember that one day all this drug monkey business will be legal. They won't leave it to people like me. Not when they finally figure out how much money there is to be made. Not millions. Fucking billions. Recreational Drugs PLC, giving people what they want. Good times today, stupor tomorrow. But this is now. So until Prohibition ends, make hay while the sun shines. I'm not a gangster. I'm a businessman whose commodity happens to be cocaine. I mean, 10 years ago, a bit of Charlie was for pop stars or a celebrity's birthday bash. It was demonized by Daily Mail readers getting drunk in naff wine bars. Now they're my biggest clients. This is Clarkie. Double first at Cambridge in industrial chemistry. Well, he's got to pay off his student loan somehow. Today, I only deal in kilos. And depending on which tariff you use, that'll cost you either 28 grand or 15 years in prison, which is more time than a rapist. C'est la vie. It is vital that we work to a few golden rules. Always work in a small team. Keep a very low profile. Only deal with people who come recommended. I mean, it's like selling anything. Washing machines, handmade shoes, blowjobs. As long as you don't take the piss, people will always come back for more. I mean, that's not to say that we don't weave that special kind of magic that makes 2 kilos into 3, but never be too greedy. Know and respect your enemy. It is only very, very stupid people who think the law is stupid. And avoid, like the fucking plague, loud, attention-seeking, wannabe gangsters in it for the glory, to be a face, to be a name.
Hello, Slavon? Yeah, it's the Duke. Everyone's sweet. Look at me.
They don't mean to fuck up.
What time? Yeah?
They just do.
All right.
Now, forgive me for stating the obvious, but stay away from the end user. They are guaranteed to bring you trouble. As do guns. I hate guns and violence. But, as some Roman general once said, if you seek peace, plan for war. Morty and his assistant Terry, they watch my back. Morty learned to be cautious the hard way. He did 10 years inside. He's my bridge to the criminal world. and he ensures that the traffic is one way.
The narrator, and he only narrates the beginning and the end. There's not a lot of, there's no, as far as I can remember, narration in the rest of the movie, which is good. But we have Daniel Craig's character, who is known, at least in the credits, as Mr. XXXX. So we're just going to call him Craig for these purposes, if that's okay with you.
Yes.
He describes that he is not a gangster. He's a businessman whose commodity happens to be cocaine. And he's kind of a, he's a successful drug dealer. I mean, he deals in kilos, but he's not the top of any food chain. He's just in the middle somewhere.
He's not a gangster by any stretch of the imagination.
No. And he is suave as all heck.
He's very calculated about how he does business. He has one supplier who has very specific rules about how he deals with him. And he employs some folks, a very small number of folks that keep him separated pretty much from the criminal element who are on the other end of the drug trade.
Exactly. And he doesn't, as he explains, he doesn't want to have any contact with the end user if possible. During the exposition, we meet an employee named Clarky, who is basically paying off his student loans by working for Craig. We will recognize Clarky, whose role is small, but of course, we'll recognize him as Tom Hardy.
There are so many people in this movie.
Yes, Tom Hardy from, and again, these are selected titles, but you'll see why in a second. He's best known for Star Trek Nemesis and Child 44.
I'm not familiar with Child 44.
Well, I haven't read the book, but I've heard good things. But did you ever see the movie Citizen X?
I don't think so.
It's a movie about a serial killer, or actually, it's a movie about the investigation of a serial killer in the Soviet Union based on a real serial killer and the bureaucracy of the Soviet government making the investigation very difficult. And so I highly recommend the movie Citizen X, and I'm hoping for good things for Child 44. And apparently the book goes into, it's a nice immersion in that whole life during that period of Soviet Russia. But anyway, so we meet Clarky, Tom Hardy, and he's one of the inner circle of Craig's people. And then we meet a group of loud wannabe gangsters in Amsterdam, including the crazy Duke, played by Jamie Foreman, best known from EastEnders.
Yeah, so this group is, they are such caricatures of themselves that I didn't even think they were going to be actual, like, important characters in the movie. I thought they were just maybe a cutaway to show the opposite of what Daniel Craig was trying to be and how he was describing the folks he did not want to be like. But it turns out they are actually important to this movie.
Oh, yeah, very. And much like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and Rock and Rolla, where there are things that happen because people are stupid, that have just enough realism that they fit into the rest of the story, but they are just sort of caricatures in a lot of cases. But I find that fun because I love Duke's girlfriend, Slasher. By the way, played by Sally Hawkins from Godzilla 2014, as well as the Duke's second in command, Gaza, played by Bern Gorman, who plays in Pacific Rim, The Dark Knight Rises, and he is Michael Jeffrey, Jimi Hendrix's manager, in Jimmy All Is By My Side. It's coming out soon. Little note, Michael Jeffrey, to conspiracy theorists, is possibly the guy who killed Jimi Hendrix.
What?
Yeah, it's okay. It's not, the movie isn't about that, I don't think, because the movie doesn't even get you to Monterey Pop Festival. It's all in England.
I didn't even know there was a conspiracy theory about Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, well, you know, again, it's not anything to be worried about, unless your last name is Hendrix. But okay, back to the movie. So we got these people, Duke, Slasher, and Gaza, who are these bumbling wannabe gangsters. And then we meet Morty and Terry. Now, Morty is played by George Harris, who is Kingsley Shacklebolt from Harry Potter. And Terry is played by Tamer Hassan, who is a limo driver in Batman Begins, and he plays in Kick-Ass.
Yeah, Monty is not the only Harry Potter refugee in this movie.
Oh, no, not at all. And he's not Monty, right? He's Morty?
Sorry, Morty.
Yeah, no, that's okay, because I typed Monty a couple times and realized, no, this is Morty. Yeah, no, we're going to get to the... Well, as soon as we get done with people's credits, then we'll actually get into more of the story, because one of my favorite characters in both this movie and I think maybe in all movies is a man named Gene, who's one level higher in the food chain, who's played by Colm Meaney, who is Chief O'Brien from Star Trek Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and a ton of other things. By the way, the guy two steps ahead, the guy who's ahead of Gene, is Jimmy Price. He's played by Kenneth Cranham from Valkyrie and Maleficent. But
he's in Maleficent?
Yep.
Oh, he was the king.
Yep.
He's put on a lot of weight.
Well, you know, he's not a leading man type guy. And his character is sort of a heavy on the drama.
Yes.
So again, in the opening montage, we have the inner circle, Clarky. We have Terry, who's sort of in the same level as Clarky. And then we have Morty, who is like the muscle. And I love this character, because Morty is very efficient.
Yes, I like him too, because he doesn't talk much, but his wheels are always spinning. He does a lot of nonverbal acting.
Yes, and he is from the way back. The Craig character tells us, you know, life was simpler when he was a kid and they were real gangsters. And now it's more of a business. And Morty lived through the times of the original gangsters. He and Gene are like from that period. And that's how...
Yeah, it turns out Gene and Jimmy and Morty actually go way back. Something that I didn't understand until much later in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's on purpose, because you get hit with a lot of characters in short order, but luckily the movie does a pretty good job of keeping everybody straight. So Morty, Terry, Craig, and Clarky are the four main people in Craig's group, and they give all the drugs and money through Gene. And all that goes up to Jimmy. And Jimmy's our top dog in this, at least the first part of this movie. So after this quick little opening, Gene mentions that Price wants to meet up with Craig for lunch at the Stoke Park Country Club. And Craig is like, well, Morty is instantly like, why? Why does he want to meet with us? Is there something wrong? And Craig is like, it's fine. We'll go meet with him, right? What could it be? Before the meeting, though, Craig goes to his accountant, one Mr. Singh, who launders his money. Now, Craig is getting ready to retire. He's going to end up with a check for about £1 million. And that's what he's going to use to ride off in the sunset. The meal with Jimmy is just going to be his last supper, as he describes it. By the way, this is where the opening credits start. 9 minutes and 20 seconds into the film.
Rather creatively.
Yeah, I thought so. By the way, the music in this film is pretty great. There were several songs.
Yeah, I did.
There were several songs that could have used as the opening to our little podcast, but in honor of Brother Jay, I chose by the Scissor Sisters, Tits on the Radio.
Very nice.
Yeah, which is a fun song. So, anyway, so they go to lunch at the country club, and Jimmy gives Craig an assignment. Craig is to find Charlie, who's played by Natalie Lungi, who, by the way, is the daughter of Roland Joffe and the brother of Rowan Joffe. Charlie, the Charlie character, who he has to find, is the daughter of one of Jimmy's old pals, Eddie Temple, who is played by Michael Gambon, who is Dumbledore.
The second one.
The second Dumbledore?
Yes.
I didn't realize there were two. I've never seen any of those movies or read any of the books.
The first one died. I think after the third movie.
Oh, well, that's unfortunate. I mean, it's good for Michael Gambon.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was also in Gosford Park, Sleepy Hollow, the Cook, the Thief, His Wife and Her Lover, and Ollie G in the House. And a ton of other stuff, of course. So anyway, the daughter of Eddie Temple, Charlie, is hooked on cocaine and she's gone missing. Maybe she's hooked on heroin too, as it turns out. And she's gone missing. So Jimmy wants Craig to go find her.
Even though that's not part of Craig's core competencies.
Oh yeah, he doesn't want to do the job. It's not his thing. But Jimmy basically forces him into it. And right. I put in my notes that Craig is a smooth operator. He's pretty much the smartest guy in the room. And this is where I noted that he's the Bond that I wanted to see more of in Casino Royale. But you're right, Casino Royale was Bond before Bond, so that works out fine.
Yeah, so he gets his assignment, and he tries to push back on it, but Jimmy makes it clear that he doesn't care if it's what he does. He's a smart guy, and he trusts him to get it done. And if he doesn't get it done, he'll have a problem with Jimmy.
And he does not want to have a problem with Jimmy.
Right.
So he's like, yeah, okay. And in the meantime, Gene takes Craig to go see Duke. Because Duke has some drugs that Gene wants Craig to find a buyer for. Now, neither Morty nor Craig are happy with dealing with Duke, who we've seen before is the wannabe gangster guy. Well, I'm going to drop in the little quote where Craig and Duke talk for the first time.
Come on. Oh, don't go getting Duke up. Jimmy doesn't want him fucked about, okay?
Who? Me?
Don't you fucking talk to me like I'm some kind of mug. Fucking talk to me like
Duke,
that.
Duke, don't take this personally. It's business. Now, you want to know how much these pills are worth?
Yes, fucking please.
Right, now, just because you pay a fiver a pop down the local cattle market, don't, for fuck's sake, start thinking these pills are worth millions. They're not. We've got to find someone to buy these pills, and then they've got to split them up into parcels of, say, I don't know, 100,000. They've got to find these people. It's hard work.
Oh, you give a fucking aspirin an headache, pal.
Then you've got currency fluctuations, you've got police activity, you've got adverse publicity. I mean, you tell me, who has got the readies lying around to pay for a million each?
This is fucking bullshit! Shut the shut the fuck up!
Duke, we all want a good deal out of this.
Mate, look. That parcel of pills has got to be worth 5 million easy.
£5 each, yeah?
You're fucking joking. It doesn't work like that.
Don't keep fucking saying that to me.
I've got some samples. I'll stay in touch with Gene, okay?
You wouldn't be so fucking flash if you didn't have him behind you, would you, eh?
Yeah. Well, he fucking has, ain't he?
And the best part of Duke is his girlfriend Slasher, because she is high on whatever and screeching in the background in every scene that she's in. And so I found her very charming.
Yeah. She reminds me of, this is going to be sort of an obscure reference, so you're going to have to go on a bit of a ride with me. Are you familiar with the Alicia Keys song? No one.
I am not.
Because it's a great song. She's a great singer. She built the hell out of it. But at the end, sort of as an accent, there's a guy in the background whose sole purpose in the song is just to go, oh.
Oh, 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 oh,
Slasher reminded me of the old guy. That's what she was doing in the background the whole time, screeching and trying to punctuate whatever Duke was saying.
Oh, it's great because Duke is way over his head, but Slasher makes Duke look like he's super suave like Craig.
Yeah.
So we have Craig meeting Duke for this drug deal, and it doesn't really go well from Duke's point of view. And then we have the second job, of course, finding Charlie. So Craig meets up with his two pals, Cody and Tiptoes. Cody, I recognized him from a Jeff Goldblum straight-to-video movie in the 80s or early 90s, which was obscure enough not to write down the name of. But Tiptoes was from EastEnders and Star Wars Attack of the Clones. Anyway, Cody and Tiptoes are approaching the club and asked to help find Charlie, Temple's daughter. But at the same club, he runs into Sydney, played by Ben Whishaw, who shall be best known as Q in Skyfall.
I didn't even recognize him.
Yeah, who happens to be Duke's nephew. And he is way over his head, too, but he has an incredibly hot girlfriend, Tammy, played by Sienna Miller. And Sienna Miller is something of a serious star in England, and this is her breakout role.
Gee, what is she a star from?
I think her mom was like personal assistant to David Bowie. And so she has those contacts. And oh, maybe her mom, after being personal assistant with David Bowie, ran the Lee Strasberg acting school or acting studio. So she had that connection and she was modeling, but this was her first serious role. And then later, of course, she played in G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra and Stardust, the remake of Alfie, and she's in Foxcatcher.
Alfie, that's where I know her from.
Yeah.
She was also in Factory Girl.
Oh, which I have not seen.
It's a pretty good movie.
Yeah. Well, she's fine. I mean, she's not doing much heavy lifting in this movie, but what she does is fine. And she's got the right kind of pretty for this role.
She's definitely Craig's type. Because instead of blowing off Sydney, which I think he actually does blow him off, because Sydney wants to hang out with him because he's a cool guy.
Well, and Duke already had, well, we find a little bit later that Duke throws Craig's name around as if Duke is working with Craig on all these things. And Sydney is Duke's nephew, and so Sydney wants to be like Duke, so he's sort of trying that same, you know, tactic.
Right, and Craig wants to have nothing to do with him until he sees the girl.
Yeah, and he's pretty shameless about that. I mean, he's not, you know, he's not obvious. He's still a suave guy. But, yeah, that's why he's there, for no other reason.
Yeah, because as soon as she slips him her number, he's out of there. He calls it a night with Sydney.
Yeah, leaving poor Sydney sitting in a booth by himself, kind of trying to look cool, rocking out by himself, which is hard to do. So, then Craig goes to try to find a buyer for this ecstasy. By the way, they have a million pills of ecstasy that all have a high MDMA content. So this is a pretty significant amount of drugs. And he has to go try to find a buyer. And so he goes and meets with these gangsters, Trevor and Shanks. Shanks, by the way, Stephen Walters was in Batman Begins and Hannibal Rising.
Yeah, so these pills seemingly are going to fetch a lot of money on the street, which is why Jimmy is interested in having Craig as the one to help Duke sell them, because he knows, he trusts that Craig can move the pills because he's a mover and a shaker. Since Duke somehow falls under Jimmy's organization, you know, Jimmy will get a piece of the sale. So Jimmy wants to make sure this thing happens. And he knows Duke is too much of a fuck up to do it on his own.
Yeah, exactly. And Duke, both Duke and Slasher are a little pissed because Craig tells them right out they're not worth nearly as much as they think they're worth because there's a lot of middleman costs involved in the whole thing. But Craig has no idea what sort of cost these pills are going to have for him, but we're going to get to there. Actually, Trevor and Shanks tell him flat out what the problem is. They're going to be, you know, they would be the prospective buyers of this, and that would be all great, except that they happen to tell Craig that, oh yeah, they know how they got these pills. They were stolen from a gang of Serbian war criminals in the Netherlands. The Serbians are not ones to be trifled with. So they have sent a hitman, Dragon, played by a guy named Dragon, to both find the pills and to literally bring the Serbian ringleader of the head of the person responsible. So
and because Duke was throwing around Craig's name, they think Craig was involved with the robbery.
Exactly. So now Craig and his little band of guys are now in danger because of this Duke thing, which, by the way, does not make Morty very happy, because it makes him look like an amateur, and it makes them, you know, they're in danger. So he's like, this is crap. This is why we don't deal with people like Duke. Now,
yeah, it was one of the few times he actually had some fury behind his words when he got out of that meeting and realized what was going on.
Oh, yeah. And we find out in short order that Morty may be Craig's guy, and he's loyal, but he's also not to be trifled with himself. So, anyway,
right. Yeah. He spent some time in jail, and he's not going to go back, not even out of loyalty for Craig.
Exactly. A little side note here. Trevor and Shanks have two other guys that are part of their group. One of which is a guy who scans for bugs and things, but also wears headphones the entire time that you see him, or most of the time that you see him. His name is Lucky. And there's a little, we don't really know what he's listening to in his headphones until much later in the movie, but it's a kind of a fun thing. So Morty is really pissed about finding out that now these Serbians are involved, because the Serbians are kind of like the equivalent of the Colombians in Scarface. They are brutal and forced to be reckoned with. And we already have established that Craig doesn't like guns. Craig doesn't like violence, you know. He's a businessman.
But yeah, he doesn't get his hands dirty. He's not accustomed to violence.
Nope, not at all. So, they get back to one of their places and find that the Dragon has already struck. They're like another lower level guy in Craig's group, Paul the Boatman, has been killed and tortured with an iron. And so Morty is now super angry at this. And during the whole thing, he's telling Craig, you need to call Jimmy. Like, call him on his phone and tell him that this shit is going on. So Craig actually calls Jimmy, leaves a message on his machine. And Jimmy ends up calling Craig later and is pissed at two things. First, for calling him at home. Actually, three things. Second, for calling him Jimmy, even though he told him to earlier. Actually, four things. Third, he was disrespectful to Duke. But most importantly, he's pissed because Craig has hired Cody and Tiptoes to find Charlie instead of doing it himself, as he was instructed to do.
And he reiterates how important it is that he find Charlie and sell the pills.
Yes. So, Cody calls Craig, and Craig goes to this flop house where they have found Charlie's boyfriend, Kinky. Unfortunately, Kinky has overdosed and is dead, and Charlie is not there. But Cody, I guess interrogates may be sort of the strong word, but they talk to these heroin addicts who are still at the flop house. And by the way, I love them.
They were hilarious.
They were so funny. Because, you know, it's a mixture of being like a, they call him gearhead, but also having the thick accent is too funny.
They actually reminded me of the kids outside of Dixie's house in Lethal Weapon, but all grown up.
Yeah. Well, Jason reminded me that I got that quote wrong, of course. Anyway, he liked those podcasts.
Did you ever go back and listen to that?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely, they're going to bust her. Yeah, I think I put it in right in the podcast at the time.
Yeah. Oh, very good.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You were absolutely right. Anyway, yeah, so we find out from this little exchange that Charlie has gone to Brighton, and the gearheads think that Kinky was actually murdered, just didn't overdose, which Cody is not happy with that. Also, he wants to be paid for finding Kinky, even though Kinky was dead and it doesn't lead to Charlie. But we find out that Craig is not a bad guy. He does agree to pay Cody for finding Kinky, even though that wasn't part of the original deal. And he calls 999 for an ambulance to pick up Kinky's body. And
right. He's a good leader of men. He lays down the law when he has to. Like the whole Kinky thing, he explains to Cody that finding Kinky was not part of the deal, but in the end, he knows that he is gonna need Cody on his side. So he eventually capitulates to giving him the money. He does it in a way that makes him seem generous, and not that he's getting worked by Cody.
Yeah, exactly. So everybody's happy. Well, not everybody. Craig and Morty go to a diner. And you can tell just by their posture that Morty is supremely unhappy that things are out of control. And Craig is just sort of trying to placate him. And who walks in to this little diner? But this guy, turns out his name is Freddy, Ivan K. from Vikings, The Borgias, and Dark Shadows.
The television show?
Yep.
Have you seen that?
I have not, but you've said good things.
Yeah. Turns out our father has watched it.
Oh, cool.
Very, very weird, but yeah. So this is where I decided that I loved this movie. Because, as you mentioned before, this movie is really dense. It's intricate. I mean, it's called Layer Cake for a reason. And this was the part of the movie where you felt like, okay, they've just heaped so much stuff on us as the audience that we have to keep track of and wrap our heads around, that this diner scene felt like it was going to be the scene where we got to take a breath, you know, along with the characters themselves. Sit down at the diner, kind of think about what has gone on and plan the next move. But then Freddy comes in and it gets all weird, and then shit goes down. So you do not get to take a breath at all.
Oh no, not at all. Cause Eddie sits down and Freddy sits down. We have no idea who Freddy is. And there's so many characters in this movie, I was thinking, hold on, do we know Freddy before? Is Freddy some, you know, who is Freddy?
Yeah, so Freddy is seemingly this homeless dude who somehow knows Morty.
Yeah, recognizes him, sits down at his table, and eats this big English breakfast in exactly the disgusting way you'd imagine that Aqualung would eat an English breakfast.
Yes.
He's not quite Aqualung, but yeah, he's definitely, while Morty is wearing a nice suit and looks all very buttoned up, Freddy is not. And the fact that they know each other, at first I thought maybe Morty didn't like him because of that. And then you realize there's something else going on, because after the meal, Freddy asks Morty for just, you know, a few bucks, because he's doing well, obviously, you know, and Freddy can use a couple bucks. And Morty gives him a couple bucks, and Freddy asks for 5. And Morty says, well, how about 10? 10's a nice big round number. And then he proceeds to beat the holy crap out of Freddy as Duran Duran's Ordinary World plays.
While talking about 10 years of his life.
Yes.
That's why 10 is such a nice round number.
Yes. And it's not clear at this point exactly what's going on, except that Morty has a problem with Freddy. Not even Craig knows what the problem is. But there are a couple scenes in this movie where people get beat up, and they're both done. It's very brutal. And during this ordinary world scene where Morty is hitting and then kicking the crap out of Freddy, then we see...
And then stomping.
Oh, yeah, and then stomping. And then we see a quick cutaway to Duke and Slasher arguing with somebody. And then Craig is telling Morty, that's enough. And Morty's like, oh, I'll tell you when it's enough. And goes and picks up a big pot of tea, hot tea, and pours it all over the probably unconscious Freddy, who's laying in a puddle of his blood. And it is brutal. Brutal.
Yeah. It appears that Morty has just stomped Freddy to death.
Yes. In the middle of a diner. Like, the clerk is cowering.
Yeah. Like, in the middle of the afternoon.
Yeah. And then we see, as you see a shot of Freddy laying in a pool of his own blood, all messed up with a tea bag hanging off his ear. You then see a same camera pull away of Duke with a hole in his chest, clearly dead. And we have no idea what's happening there or how that happened. And then Craig and Morty leave the diner, and Craig says the immortal question, what the fuck? At which point Morty says, I'm sorry about that. I won't be around for a while, and walks off in an opposite direction.
Yeah. So Craig Muscle is now gone.
Yeah. And
he has no idea what just happened.
No. So Craig goes to Gene and asks, who Freddy? Who's this Freddy guy? So this is one of the lovely flashback scenes in this movie where Gene tells a little story about back in the day when he and Morty ran with a guy named Crazy Larry. Who, by the way, Crazy Larry is played by Jason Fleming. He is from Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, Benjamin Button, Snatch, X-Men First Class, Kick-Ass. He is Jekyll and Hyde in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. He is in Rockstar, Spice World, and he plays Dr. Quatermass in the Quatermass Experiment TV movie in 2005.
You have not seen Rockstar?
I have.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I remember liking it, although I thought it was different than I thought it was going to be.
Right.
But,
yeah. So he was the Rob Halford type of character in that movie.
He's a little like the Rob Halford character in this movie too. He is Sidney.
Yeah. This was such a great story, and they had flashbacks. So, they had actors playing these characters, but it is so short, and not the information was important to the movie, but you didn't necessarily need to like see Crazy Larry, but it's so great that he actually filmed the scene to show the flashback while Gene is explaining to Craig about the history between Morty and Freddy.
Oh yeah. And actually you get to see this scene from at least two, if not three, different angles. Because they show this scene, this flashback, in this part of the movie, and then later they have the same scene from a different point of view, but the whole same scene, where basically you have Crazy Larry sitting in this booth with a bunch of women and entourage and stuff around him, and this guy wearing this like white disco suit comes into this club, has like a sawed-off shotgun. He's sort of pointing it at people, like acting kind of like a badass, but kind of playing. And then sort of points it at Crazy Larry and then sticks it in his own mouth and blows his own head off.
Yes. Crazy Larry didn't seem fazed by this at all.
No. No. And this is where you find out that Morty, who has always been loyal, by the way, at this point in the 70s or whatever, he is properly mustachioed. He volunteers to dispose of the body because he's a good soldier. So the guy Crazy Larry sent with him to help was Freddy. And so while Morty was in the back of this van, Freddy was driving, Freddy nodded off either from drugs or drink or both. He nodded off at a traffic light. And they were stopped by a police officer who then opened the back of the van to find Morty sitting next to this headless body. And they point out that being black was even worse than being Irish back then. So Morty was sentenced to 10 years in prison, and Freddy did 3 years as like an accomplice.
Right, but the whole reason this kid blew his head off led to maybe the best line in the whole movie, which is said by Crazy Larry.
Yeah, which is basically his only line, right?
Yeah, his only line.
Yeah, Gene is telling the story, and he admires that Morty kept his mouth shut for the whole thing, whole 10 years, everything, even though the whole reason behind the shooting was that Crazy Larry was having sex with the guy that killed himself, kind of against his will. And so this is where Craig asks him if he was gay. He's like, no, gay? This is no gay.
Crazy Larry was gay.
He was never gay. Oh, Larry used to say, fucking females is for puffs.
There's so many things wrong with that line.
Yes,
from
yes.
every angle.
But it's hilarious. And they mentioned that, yeah, later, Crazy Larry was killed. Presumably some sort of parties unknown to Craig, and Gene doesn't really have anything more to offer at this point about how that happened.
Except that it was likely one of his boyfriends because he had been taking too many liberties with straight lads.
Yes. So after this whole story, Gene gives a little bit of explaining life to Craig. Because since Freddy was in hospital and maybe not expected to live, that puts Craig in the position of either, since he was with Morty when it happened, he's either going to be going to prison as an accomplice, or he'll be in the witness box testifying against Morty. Neither of which are good things, places to be.
And this is when Craig decides he's going to take up Gene's offer to get drunk with him.
Yes, yes. And after that, after they get a little bit drunk, that's where Gene tells Craig that he needs to have a gun and proceeds to loan him a gun. Now,
he needs to have a gun because this dragon guy that's after him is a serious business.
Yes. It turns out Gene is something of a gun enthusiast. He's got a nice little selection of guns. And there's a funny scene where Craig picks out this very James Bondian Luger and kind of does a little James Bond, like, around the corner, soup in a room kind of action, clearly having no idea what he's really doing, and Gene pointing out that, let me take that from you and find out if it's even loaded, you jackass. Which, of course, it is.
What?
Yeah.
Yep.
And then he disassembles the whole thing. By the way, this is shot through a glass tabletop from below. Well, a little callback to High Anxiety, or perhaps, what's it, The Lodger? And that's where there's a funny line where he's like, wow, it looks like you can do this blindfolded. And Gene's like, as a matter of fact, I can, and have.
That's how Gene meditates.
Yes.
Disassembling and reassembling his firearms.
You know, meditation is important. And Gene also gives another life lesson to Craig, and that's if you ever kill somebody, never tell anyone. Which seems like good advice.
It really is.
Yeah. The next morning, Craig is awoken by his cell phone ringing, and he answers it, and it's Dragon. This is my favorite quote in the movie.
What is this?
How do you get this number?
Boatman Paul gave me your number, Indians. Well, I believe you have some property that belongs to my employer. And you're the person I should talk to about the return of this cargo. Stolen by your associate, the Duke.
Dragon. The Duke is nothing to do with me.
Mr. Duke came to Amsterdam, used your name, said he worked for you. listening.
Dragon? I've got an idea. Why don't you come around for breakfast? I'll squeeze some orange juice and grind some coffee, and we can talk about this like adults. How does that sound?
Sounds very hospitable.
Do you know where I live?
No.
Well, fuck off then.
And Craig is like, okay, do you know where I live? He's like, oh, no. Craig says, then fuck off, and hangs up on him.
Yes, and then he finds out pretty soon thereafter, probably wasn't the wisest move.
But it was certainly funny at the time.
Yes, I'm sure very satisfying.
Yeah. So, and that's what kind of badass Craig is. In the meantime, Gaza calls Gene, and he wants to dump the pills because Duke is now missing, and he's getting nervous, and he's like, you know, this is just sitting on all these pills is too dangerous. I want to dump them all if you don't get the shit done. So Gene then tells Craig to get this done, this drug deal done. And then Craig tells Clarky and Terry to go find the pills. This is when Craig phones Tammy. And
yeah, because Duke's crew has gone off the grid. They've gone into hiding.
And he's got he's got to find some way to find Duke, and the one angle he can work on his own, at least, is calling Tammy, who maybe via her relationship with Sydney, he'll find out where Duke is hiding out.
Plus, it's a good excuse to call Tammy.
It is, and Tammy is very receptive to being called. So, they meet, and they're going to have a little tryst, and we get the Stones' Gimme Shelter, which is such a great song. And Tammy gives him the important piece of where she thinks Duke is hanging out and goes off to the bathroom to dress into Lethal Weapon lingerie. And they've already ordered room service or whatever, or they'd mentioned that over the phone. So when Craig calls presumably Clarky and Terry and says, hey, check out this angle on where Duke is, then room service comes and Craig answers the door. And in a very effective scene, is kidnapped by these guys posing as room service. And then poor Tammy, all dressed up in lingerie, no place to go.
Yeah, that was, this is the second time I've seen the movie. I remember watching it the first time. That was a very surprising scene. Normally, yeah. you think in a movie like this, they would be perfect place to go ahead and throw in some gratuitous sex scene.
And it's all set up to be a gratuitous sex scene. You've got the Stones plan. He's looking pretty self-satisfied in his own mirror or whatever. You know, she's all getting ready. He's getting ready. Everybody's getting ready. It'd be a perfect place for it, as you said. Nope. He is kidnapped wearing only a robe and taken off to see Dumbledore, Eddie Temple, who ends up revealing that Jimmy... And they mention this later on, but I love the expression because I only remember it. I think the first time I heard it was from the Kink song, Low Budget. But Jimmy is skint. He lost a bunch of money in a bad investment, thanks in part to Eddie. And Eddie and Jimmy have this sort of a rivalrous relationship, although Eddie is clearly feels superior to Jimmy.
Yeah, they were sort of running mates all the way back in their youth. And it seems like they took different paths. Jimmy went the Stone Cold Gangster route. And, Eddie, went more the crooked businessman route and ended up being much more, successful.
Yes, and in this business deal they had with basically some sort of foreign government that went bad, well, Eddie had only invested, like, what, 500,000 pounds? And yes. Jimmy, being greedy, invested 13 million pounds.
Pretty much everything he had.
Yes. So he is freaking out, which, by the way, tickles Eddie to no end. So while Jimmy is freaking out, Eddie is basically telling him what a moron he is. But this is where you find out that Jimmy has had Charlie kidnapped. And because he wants to force Eddie to get his money back. and that Jimmy purposely assigned Craig to the job, knowing that Eddie, if he found Craig was trying to track his daughter down, would kill him, which would then eliminate Craig, who is a potential up-and-coming rival, and getting his money back at the same time.
Yeah, that's not quite how I interpreted it. I didn't think that Jimmy had Charlie kidnapped. I think he was genuinely looking for her, so he could kidnap her and then ransom her to get his money back. And he assigned Craig to do it because he had heard that Craig was retiring, and he, maybe out of sheer jealousy, didn't want that. So he was going to kill him eventually. So he thought either he would find Charlie for him, or Eddie would kill him and take care of killing him himself.
Yeah, either way, Craig was being used and would probably end up dead at the whole end of it.
Yeah, so and this is where Craig realizes just how enormously fucked he is. Because not only is his supplier trying to kill him, seemingly only because he wants to get out of the game, but also everything that he is currently involved in is all interconnected in really bad ways. So he's looking for Charlie because Jimmy wants to ransom her to Eddie to get his money back. And Jimmy is also pushing the pill deal because he needs some cash because he went broke in this investment scheme with him and Eddie. And Dragon is targeting Craig because the pills were stolen from the Serbs. So all the shit that he's dealing with is just coming to crashing around his head. And there seems to be no escape.
Well, and also he learns from Eddie that Jimmy is a police informant as well. Anyway, all of this really pisses Craig off. He has, in the words of Connie, flipped his chicken. So he decides to use the pistol that he borrowed from Gene to go kill Jimmy. In a very un-Bond-like manner. He is not, you know, he is very self-assured in all his business dealings, very calm, cool, and collected character when it comes to negotiating face-to-face. But as far as him killing somebody, wearing, by the way, a black suit, including a baklava. I get nothing for baklava?
I gotcha.
Yeah, okay, well.
Please wait, let me try again. That's funny.
Thanks. What did we say during high anxiety?
Too funny.
Ah, there you go. Thank you. I'll throw that in at some point. anyway, so yeah, he's wearing this balaclava. And by the way, in real life, you have no idea how many times people have typed baklava into a robbery call. For a word that you wouldn't even think would come up, it's amazing. So much so that during training, I have had a picture of a balaclava right next to a picture of a piece of baklava so that people would get an understanding.
Both of them are pretty badass.
Yeah. If you went wearing a baklava to a homicide, it would be stunning.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he kills Jimmy.
Yeah, even though he's not good at the killing part, the whole, once he decides he's going to go assassinate the crime lord, it's actually very well thought out.
Oh, yeah.
Very well executed up until the point where he has to pull the trigger. And then that's the part he wasn't very, very suave at.
Yeah, and I guess you're right. That's not, he wasn't, I mean, he was very methodical when it came to everything else. It's just that one part that he is not comfortable with, he found a little problematic, just briefly. So much so that maybe you thought he wasn't going to do it.
Yeah, he might not have, but Jimmy turned around and, you know, all you can see is his, you know, the Daniel Craig striking blue eyes. So there's no doubt about who it is. And at that point, you know, when he's holding a gun on Jimmy, he doesn't really have a choice. If he doesn't kill Jimmy, Jimmy's going to kill him.
Oh, yeah. So he shoots him right in the backyard. Then after he goes home, he gets a call from Clarky, who says, hey, they found Duke's gang hideout. And Craig says, great. And yeah, he takes a little stash of money and a passport and stuff out of his little secret hidey spot. And he's going to go visit Mr. Singh, the accountant, and do a runner, I think. Unfortunately, when he gets to Mr. Singh's office, everything has been packed up. And presumably all of his retirement money has gone with it.
Even the office furniture.
Yes.
It's just rude.
It is rude. And he ends up in a very nice scene. He ends up sort of slunk down in a corner, just saying, this now he is truly in the shit. So
yeah, he has no parachute anymore.
No. So Craig calls Dragon and arranges a meeting for the next day. And then he stops by with Terry, who's spying on Duke's gang, and tells Terry to keep an eye on them. And then Eddie summons Craig again and basically tells him to sell him the pills. And Craig kind of dickers a little bit with him to get the price a little higher, claiming that he has a buyer when he really doesn't. But he eventually, relents and he's going to sell the pills to Eddie. And then he contacts Trevor and Shanks, who were going to be the buyers of the pills. And they're like, no, we don't want any part of this. But he says, I do need some help. And that's when he's like, no, you need to talk to Mr. Lucky over there. And don't tell me about it, but Mr. Lucky can probably help you out. He does some contract work on the side. So he arranges for Mr. Lucky, the guy with the headphones, to be at the Dragon meeting the next day. And that's where Craig and Morty go to visit Gene. And they're walking into this freezer area, and Craig walks in first, and then Gene immediately slams the door and bolts it closed, leaving Morty outside, and proceeds to bash Craig's head into the freezer several times in another brutal scene.
A perfect amount of blood. Just the amount you'd expect from having your face split open on chunks of ice.
Oh, yeah. It's very, yeah, it's effective. And there's no doubt about it. He is getting his ass handed to him. And Gene is one unhappy camper. He's unhappy that, of course, Jimmy's been killed. And he knows that Jimmy's been killed by Craig. And Morty outside has no idea what's going on. So he eventually smashes through the door. And Gene's telling him that that Craig has killed Jimmy. And Morty's like, he's not a killer. And then that's when Gene pulls out the evidence, which is apparently there was a cartridge casing left at the scene, which matched a gun used in a prior homicide. That was the gun that was used to kill Crazy Larry. So Morty's like, you better have a good explanation, Craig, or I'm going to help Gene kill you. And so Craig eventually gets Gene to listen to the incriminating tape recording, and everybody's happy.
And Morty's kind of happy that he now has figured out that Gene is the one that killed Crazy Larry.
Oh, yeah. They're sitting in this bar, and it's a funny scene because Craig, I believe, is in the middle, and he is just beat to crap. And we got Gene on one side and Morty on the other, and they're all just talking wistfully about the good old days. Like, oh, yeah. So now we know that that it was Gene's gun that killed Crazy Larry. So tell that story. And then they replay the scene again from the different angle where Jimmy and Gene were talking about how this Crazy Larry guy needed to be put away because he was not a businessman. He was a loose cannon, scary psychopath guy. So Gene agreed to do it. Wasn't much of a problem. Happy to do it. But, you know, the only reason he kept the gun was because it was his favorite. And Monty has a great line. He says, don't tell the other guns that you've got a favorite.
That was a great line.
And then they all laugh. Even Craig, who again is still bleeding. So, and like any good movie, he ends up, you know, looking I guess much like you did in the Bond movies, he gets his ass kicked. He looks like he has his ass kicked for the remainder of the movie.
Yes, he does.
So the next morning, Craig goes off to meet Dragon. And he takes Mr. Lucky with. And Mr. Lucky is a sniper rifle. And that's on the way to the park. We find out that what has Mr. Lucky been listening to in his headphones the entire time? French lessons. He has a test. He's studying, damn it.
So, I love that. He has a test.
Yeah, yeah. Mr. Lucky is very suave himself. He is basically telling Craig, okay, this is the part I know about, so let me tell you how this is going to work out. You're going to do what I say and blah, blah, blah. And he picked this. They did a little recon of the area to find this little, I guess it would be a copse of trees where he's going to be hunkered down in. And as soon as he can point out Dragon, Mr. Lucky will shoot Dragon and everybody will walk away. It will be all just fine. It's all going to go just fine. So they're in the bushes at the right time. Dragon comes along. He stands by this statue. And Craig is going to call him to make sure that he's the one that answers the phone, just to double check that this is Dragon. And as soon as Dragon answers the phone, boom, gunshot goes off. Sniper rifle gunshot goes off. Unfortunately, it's Mr. Lucky, or Mr. Not-So-Lucky in this case, who has been shot dead. And
yeah, that was a great little reversal right there.
Oh, fantastic. And then the sniper keeps shooting at him to illustrate the point of, no, you will do what we are telling you to do. We're just giving you one more day to turn over the pills and Duke. And we're not playing. So Craig, again, is still in the soup. So Craig ends up going back to see Gene and Morty. And they're all pissed at him because he's now fucked everything up. They're like, how could you have assumed it was going to go okay if you're going to go and kill a hitman in the park in the middle of the afternoon?
Yeah, when they put it like that, it sounds so stupid.
Exactly. And that's where Gene, who, by the way, Gene is full of knowledge that he doesn't really necessarily give out very often. Because he lives by that rule of if you kill somebody, don't talk about it. So this is where Gene reveals that Duke and Slasher had come by to visit a couple days earlier. And Slasher was very upset about Jimmy sending Craig to tell them that the pills were worthless when it was Jimmy who sent them to get the pills in the first place. Which is the first time Gene clues in to the fact that this is all one big scheme by Jimmy. And Slasher is in the back screaming and yelling and threatening. And Duke is trying his best to try to keep her calm down. And then she mentions that she's going to go to the law. And that's when Gene's, I guess, version of Morty, Gene's muscle sidekick, who is fantastic. He is a cartoon character. He never says anything. He's got a very serious mustache.
Yes, it's the mustache. That's how you know he is a total badass.
Actually, he looks like Hiccup's dad in How to Train Your Dragon. Or actually, maybe even looks more like who is he? The blacksmith guy. The gay guy who's a blacksmith that's friend of the dad. Missing a leg or an arm or both.
In what movie?
How to Train Your Dragon.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's pretty good. The second one's also pretty good. Not quite as good as the first, but it's fun.
Yeah. Okay, now's a good time for a little tangent. So you've seen How to Train Your Dragon. Did you see it in the theater?
I believe I did, yes.
And did you see it in 3D?
I did not. No, I can't. I can't do the 3D movie. It's
You don't like it, or it's too disorienting?
No, I mean, it could be disorienting. And I saw like some sort of 3D IMAX NASA Hubble space thing, which was actually pretty cool. But I have a problem with the amount of money that it costs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, turns out movies are already 3D. Yeah, your brain does that for you.
Oh.
You've been trained your whole life to watch a movie and see that there is depth.
Yes. That movie How to Train Your Dragon in particular is supposed to have like one of the best 3D movies. And I didn't see it in theater. And I have a television that is a 3D capable television. And I have a Blu-ray player that is a 3D capable Blu-ray player. But until yesterday, I'd never taken the time to sort of figure it out or try it out. And I have a 3D Blu-ray. It's the Wolverine. And so I got my old glasses out, got the settings right, and I actually tried it. And it was pretty good. It was way better than I expected.
Cool. I mean, you know, if you got it at home, fantastic.
Yeah, so it made me want to try and check out the 3D version of How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah.
Heard such good things about it.
Well, the movie is very good. I mean, I'm a big fan. It's it doesn't have the songs like Rio does, and I'm sure Rio is available in 3D also. But I'm not normally like a cheap guy. I mean, I'll spend plenty of money on entertainment, but I'm certainly not going to spend an extra $5 on a ticket for my 5-year-old daughter to wear glasses that she may not even wear for the entire show.
Yeah, I think I saw the first Thor in 3D, and I was not impressed. It seemed really dark.
Well, that's it. Yeah, that's definitely a flaw with the 3D, is that because you're only getting half the light in your eye at any time, it's dark. But, you know, I mean, I'm sure had I gone to see Avatar, I've heard that was fantastic in 3D.
I did see that in 3D, and it was very good.
Yeah. And apparently,
I thought the movie was shit, but the 3D was very impressive.
Yeah, I started to watch the movie on regular TV, and I just couldn't. It did not hold my interest in the least.
Yeah, the movie was terrible.
Yeah, so anyway. I mean, I guess I sounded pretty negative on 3D, but it's just simply the money of a kid's movie in 3D that I know. I mean, my daughter's not going to sit there for an hour and a half, or even more in some cases, with a pair of glasses on her head. It just isn't going to happen.
If we ever decide to talk about Captain America Winter Soldier for the podcast, I think I'll watch it in 3D for that.
Okay, yeah. Well, we certainly can. It's on, Okay, so this movie I don't think would benefit from 3D much at all.
No, I don't know. There'd be some cool scenes.
I guess maybe that scene up through the coffee table might be interesting in 3D. I don't know. Anyway.
I'm thinking about getting the hot tea poured on you, the audience.
Yeah, that would be true. Brutal. And yes, that's a tea pun. Gene reveals that the Duke and Slasher came to visit. And as soon as Slasher starts saying she's going to go to the police, Gene's protection...
I just have a really quick question. When you're watching the movie, did you think brutal to yourself and then, like, have a little chuckle?
Yeah, as I was typing it. Yes, I did. I typed it out, BREW-TAL. And then I typed, that's a tea pun.
This might be my favorite podcast moment yet.
I'm not proud, okay? I'm not the hero in any of these stories, but...
I love it.
I'm powerless against the pun.
Okay. Thank you for indulging me.
No, that's fine. If you have any other questions, I'm happy to answer any questions you have. In fact, for you, the listening audience, if you have questions, just send them to question@notinacreepyway. Or call our hotline, which is included at the end of every show. I could even put it in here now, but we've already kind of done a tangent. I don't really want to add that much to it. But anyway. So back to Gene and Duke and Slasher and Gene's protection guy. When Slasher starts talking about calling the police and she is screeching like she screeches in every scene, finally the protection guy just shoots her straight in the forehead and kills her and turns, and his face seems to just remain expressionless under the mustache, and Gene kind of gives him like an eyebrow or a head squint. And then the protector guy turns and shoots Duke in the chest and kills him. And then turns to Gene, and Gene's like, gives him another eyebrow. No words were said between Gene and his protection guy.
That's exactly what you want out of your protection guy.
Oh, absolutely.
That sort of nonverbal communication that normally you think of in like very very old marriages.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you could have definitely done your A Storm is Brewing sign language. They could have done that to each other as soon as Slasher came into the scene.
Indeed. So
Gene then reveals that Duke is in the freezer. So Craig then leaves holding a cooler, and we pretty much know what's in the cooler. And and Gene tells Craig that the proceeds from the pill sales will add to Gene's retirement fund. You know, since Jimmy's no longer in the picture, Gene's kind of going to fill that spot.
Yeah, so this is where Gene makes it clear that he is the new Jimmy, and he's not letting Craig off the hook at all. Craig now is doing it for him.
Yes.
With pretty much the exact same stakes.
Yeah, yeah, and he's already said that the reason that Craig isn't in the freezer is because Gene likes Craig. Craig and his buddies were able to track down the Duke gang. And so Craig comes in and starts negotiating with Gaza, the new leader, now that Duke has disappeared. And they're negotiating the sale of the pills. And then while they're negotiating, the police arrive. And there's a nice little chase through the warehouse. After Craig tells Gaza that it would not be a good idea to use the machine guns either on Craig or on the police, and instead running was about the best thing to do. So they all end up running and escaping by boat. But of course the pills are there, then the police confiscate the pills. And at the
head detective on scene turns out to be someone very familiar to the audience.
Yes, that would be Cody. So at the end of the day, and at first I thought, well, maybe Cody is a detective. But that gets cleared up pretty quickly. So Craig meets Dragon and presents him with Duke's head. And he also tells Dragon that the police have seized the pills, which Dragon says, oh yeah, I know, I was watching. But Dragon is actually happy with Duke's head. And since the pills aren't in Craig's hands, he's happy to go back to his bosses. And it turns out that the cops were actually all guys hired by Cody and Tiptoes, and they have the pills. And they took the bright yellow Range Rover, which was kind of a running gag that Duke's guys didn't know well enough not to use an inconspicuous car. So Craig takes the pills to Eddie, which is, you know, that's what he's been told to do, so that's what he's going to do. And as Eddie and Craig are in this little office area, Eddie's guys come out with guns and take the pills at gunpoint from Craig's folks. And Eddie gives Craig an envelope containing not the 3 million pounds or whatever, but instead an invitation to the Stoke Park Country Club. And basically tells him, you know, thank you for the pills, but considering all the trouble you've been, it's the least you could do is to give me all the pills. Thank you, and have a nice day. And Craig suggests that this doesn't matter whether he agrees or not. His guys are all going to be very upset and come gunning for Eddie. And that's when Eddie goes on the loudspeaker and basically says, no, they're all old. They all know the score. This has to end here, because everybody knows it. And by the way, welcome to the layer cake.
You look shocked, son.
You taking the fucking piss?
You and Jimmy have caused my little angel Charlotte considerable anxiety. She's off to Arizona for a course of intense treatment. I'm keeping those pills for myself. by way of compensation. I think I'm entitled. Simple. End of. The amount of trouble you've caused the last few days, Jimmy, poor little Jimmy, I think it would be in your interest if this thing finishes here now, today, understand?
Well, it doesn't matter what I do. This lot are going to come after you.
Now, they're too long in the tooth to go
rampaging around the country, looking for revenge. Look at them. Bunch of underendowed, aging...
Fuck pigs.
Are you enjoying this?
No, on the contrary. Take it as a compliment. You're a bright young man. This monkey business is in your blood, under your skin. You're not getting out, you're just getting in. You're only getting started. I've every faith in you. And one day in the future, it'll be you sitting here in my place, telling some young Turk the facts of life.
And they are, Mr. Temple.
You're born, you take shit. Get out in the world, you take more shit. Climb a little higher, take less shit. Till one day you're up in the rarefied atmosphere and you've forgotten what shit even looks like. Welcome to the layer cake, son.
Because it really is beautiful about how much shit you have to take at various stages of your life.
So I'm also going to put the end narration scene, because we then cut to Craig at the country club, and he's preparing to go on his retirement. He walks into the club, and all of his buddies are in there in that private room that he had gone in and had lunch with Jimmy in the beginning of the movie. And they're all toasting him and saying that, you know, the king is dead. Long live the king. And he basically says, no, I had a plan, and it's to retire. So you guys, I'm sure, have lots to talk about. By the way, they're all eating layer cake. And then he's like, I'm going to retire. And he walks out with his girlfriend, Tammy, and he's giving his, he's basically, as he's walking out, he's naming all the people that have died during this adventure.
Yeah, I mean, and you skip the part where they ended up killing Eddie and hijacking all the pills back.
Yes, sorry about that. Yeah, they did what an old-fashioned armed robbery.
It was a double cross or triple cross.
Yeah, most definitely, yeah. And so it was Trevor and Shanks who did the... So they ended up killing Eddie as well?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Which would make sense. But,
yeah, because now that Eddie's out of the way and the Serbs are satisfied, so that's why Trevor and Shanks were willing to buy the pills now. And I think this is when there was a nice cutaway to Dragon delivering the head.
Yes.
His head, right?
Yes, Dragon.
And you find out that they are making a shit ton of those pills. So they didn't really care about the lost inventory to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The inventory has nothing to do with it. It was all about, pride and respect.
That's why they're toasting Craig as the king now, because he outsmarted everybody and they made a crap load of money and they got out of it relatively unscathed. And with, his payment, which was membership to the club.
Yeah.
And where they were having a nice bit of layer cake.
They were. And then he leaves the club with Tammy in tow. And as he's walking out, there's again a nice little scene where he is like basically just naming all the dead. And he's like, that's why I'm retiring, because I don't want my name to be on this list. And oh, by the way, my name? Yeah. You're not going to get to know that, because then you'd be as smart as me. He is one suave motherfucker, I put in my notes.
Yeah, the first time I watched this movie, I think I had gotten all the way to the end without even realizing that I didn't know his name.
Yeah, I know. That's until he didn't give his name in the phone booth thing, I didn't realize it either. But yeah, Now, as soon as he said it, it's like, yeah, because he is a suave guy. He turns to the camera and says, oh, no, you're not going to know my name. Unfortunately, that's when he turns away from the camera, or you see a shot from the opposite view where he and Tammy are walking down the steps. And...
if you're going to hang around in this game, that's where you've got to aim to be. Sitting in your bonded warehouse with the ex-professional soldiers doing the dirty work while you deliver the highly suspect educational lecture to baffle your opponents and cover your tracks. The art of good business is being a good middleman, putting people together. I'll always thank Eddie for telling me that. It's all about honor and respect. Did I really think Eddie was going to give me $3 million for those pills? Did I fuck? But suddenly, there was a void where once there was Jimmy Price. And after a couple of days of going around in my head, Eddie's little getting in and getting out speech started to make sense.
King is dead. Long live the king.
Well, I'm honored. But for me, this is all over. Getting out. What was true then is true now. Have a plan, stick to it. So I'm sure you gentlemen must have lots to discuss, but I have no business being here. Got someone to meet. Adios, amigo.
The boatman, Kinky, the Duke, Slasher, Kilburn Jerry, Crazy Larry, Mr. Lucky, Troop, Jimmy. I didn't want to add my name to that list. My name? If you knew that, you'd be as clever as me.
I'm sorry.
Sydney.
Yeah, yeah, we forget. Sydney, Tammy is Sydney's girlfriend, or was. And Sydney can't help himself, so he shoots Craig to death right there on the steps.
And then apologizes, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like, oh, so sorry, and he runs off. And Craig is laying there just bleeding. Then we hear Joe Cocker's version of Misunderstood. Play us out for the end credits. Can always be a letter when everything goes wrong. You see, so bad. Oh, but I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Yeah, rest in peace, Joe Cocker.
I actually wrote down, not a pun, I wrote down that we needed to, pour one out for our fallen homie Joe, gone but not forgotten.
Yeah, it did make me sad. I think I finished the movie on the day I found out that Joe Cocker died.
Oh, well, that's that. Another just a little connection here. Gaza, who plays Michael Jeffrey, Hendrix's manager, also manager of the Animals. Man, Animals, most popular, or one of their most popular songs, Misunderstood. Yeah. So, at first, I thought, is this like a dream sequence at the end? Like, are we building all the way to him just being shot down in a piece of senseless violence?
Yeah, we are.
Yep. Turns out, I guess we can rule out a sequel.
Great. I mean, it's a great ending, because he was just a little too smart for everybody in the room.
Exactly. And where he doesn't necessarily get what he deserves, there were several times throughout the movie that you realize that, yeah, he wasn't quite as smart as he thought he was. And the end was all tap dancing. I mean, it all worked out well, but it wasn't by his grand design.
Nope.
So, anyway.
I actually thought the ending was... That was a great ending. It was unexpected. You kind of, I would have been okay with the feel good right off of Sunset ending, but this, the final murder of the main character just reminded you what kind of movie it actually was.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just one pile of shit after another, and every time he thinks he's out, he has to deal with another pile of shit. And then at the end, when he thinks he's out of everything, he has to deal with another pile of shit.
Yep. And much like the incident at the diner, it did. You're absolutely right. It fit perfectly. And, you know, poor Sydney.
No, she never gets there to consummate her relationship with Craig.
Oh, yeah. No, Tammy. But I mean poor Sydney, the guy that shot him.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Yeah. Poor Tammy, obviously. But, poor Sydney. He's a loser from the beginning. Although you
okay,
do,
they'll work together again.
You do get to see all the guys at the end, you know, like Tom Hardy, like smoking a cigar, getting ready to be Bane.
Right.
By the way, I did not know that Tom Hardy had the Star Trek connection that Colin Meaney did. By the way, you were the one that told me that that Colin Meaney's character. Let's see. In Next Generation, don't tell me, Chief O'Brien? Were you the one that told me that you were impressed that he was the only one that used whatever that... what was the name of the room they used to have their little fantasy adventures?
I don't think it was me, because I have no idea what to talk about.
Okay, Star Trek Next Generation. They had... there's that room, like the hologram room or whatever it's called.
The holodeck,
yes. I thought it was you, but somebody had mentioned that, and this is before a podcast, so it was a very limited number of people that were telling me their observations about stuff, but they mentioned that Chief O'Brien was the only character that used the holodeck like people really would, which is basically to have sexual fantasies.
That is not even accurate.
Oh, okay.
It was a different character.
Oh, well, okay, then what character was that?
Oh, and you're really taxing.
But it must have been you that told me that then. So it wasn't Colin Meaney. I'm just confusing the characters.
Yeah. It was another sciencey dude.
Well, we're just going to cut that part out of this little thing. Perhaps we'll put in a replay of the brutal pun.
We should.
So, anything else on Layer Cake?
Yeah. I guess I never... I didn't describe what my relationship to this movie was. I'm the one that recommended me talk about this, obviously, because you haven't seen it before. But this is a movie that I rented. I remember renting it from Blockbuster after it came out. I hadn't really heard anything about it, but it had a cool-looking cover. And it had an actor that I had seen in one movie before. I think it was called Mother. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Not the Debbie Reynolds Mother.
Nope. The Daniel Craig Mother. Where Daniel Craig played like this kind of drifter character who ends up having an affair with his friend's much older mother.
Okay.
It was not a movie I expected at all, but it was a really good performance. And so I saw this movie, had that same actor, and had a kind of a cool cover. So I was like, oh, I'll check this out, not knowing anything about it. And I just remember watching it with my wife, who did not enjoy it. I mean, she kind of thought it was clever, but I watched it, and I thought, this movie is badass. I mean, it was, we talked mostly about the plot. It's a great plot, so it's well-written, lots of great characters, and the performances really brought those characters to life, you know, except for maybe the the shotgun eating kid, everybody, I think, gave a fantastic performance. But on top of that, the movie itself was really interesting looking. It was shot really well. It was really stylized in certain parts, but not too much. So looking at the credits, it makes a lot of sense that Matthew Vaughn has a relationship with, the director of Snatch and, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. His name is, Guy Ritchie. Cause there was a certain amount of that kind of stylized, parts of the movie. There are some quick cuts. The chase from the cops was really interesting to watch. And even in the very beginning, during the opening narration, where Craig is sort of laying out his business model, he's kind of fantasizing about a world where drugs are legal. And there's a really stylized scene where he's like walking through a boutique store that's selling illicit narcotics. And it's a really interesting looking scene.
Oh, yeah.
So the movie making itself was really well done, but not, it wasn't overdone in a way that I think Guy Ritchie movies sometimes, I find Guy Ritchie movies, pretty much, all of them tend to exhaust me, even if I enjoy them. They are exhausting to sit through because of how stylized they are. But I thought this was relatively subdued. It was paced really well. I just thought it was all together. It was just a well put together, well executed, well performed movie. It really came out of nowhere for me. And it's no surprise to me at all that most of the people involved in this movie have got on to bigger stardom afterwards.
I was going to mention the, FC UK, the Fashion Connection UK. That's the boutique he's walking through, that where you're seeing all these little bottles of like perfume or whatever that all have these names, like, you know, ecstasy for lovers and, you know, cocaine or something. And then it just morphs into, he's basically at a chemist's, and I forget what he's actually buying, but it's just some sort of like regular old drugstore sort of thing.
Toothpaste or something.
Yeah, something really mundane. Let me tangent off here. The other movie, that I talked to Brother Jay about tonight was The Money Pit, and that was directed by Richard Benjamin. And Richard Benjamin is the opposite of this guy as far as directing. Because as we talked about a little bit, he seems to be a very unstylish, middle of the road director. He's best known for My Favorite Year with Peter O'Toole. And then City Heat, Mermaids, Made in America, the Whoopi Goldberg Ted Danson classic, Milk Money, Melanie Griffith Harris, and Marcy X, Lisa Kudrow and Damon Wayans. Again, the opposite kind of director. While The Money Pit had some really funny scenes and really like Abbott and Costello, Rube Goldberg kind of contraptions for humor, otherwise, it was pretty clunky as far as the filmmaking. But, yeah, this was very stylish. I was very impressed and happy to watch this. It actually makes me want to watch Stardust and X-Men First Class.
Yeah, I really like X-Men First Class. Have you not seen it?
I have not seen it.
Yeah, I think it's great. There's a little middle part with Magneto. Sort of, I mean, you read the comics, I'm not giving anything away. Young Magneto is a bit of a Nazi hunter. And, it's a pretty short part of the movie, but it was so badass. While I was watching, I was thinking, I want to watch an entire movie that is just Magneto Nazi hunter. It was great. But the entire movie is good. Crazy Larry's in it.
Yeah, well, a lot of these guys are in it.
Yeah.
Have you seen Harry Brown?
The Michael Caine movie?
Yeah.
I think I have. Is that a vigilante type movie?
Yeah, it's kind of like you can only push an old guy so far before it turns into like Death Wish, falling down kind of thing. More like Death Wish, actually.
Yeah, I think I've seen it. It didn't stick with me.
It was, and again, this Matthew Vaughn was only a producer on that, but it struck me only in so far as Michael Caine can do anything. Did you ever see the original Get Carter?
The original which one?
Get Carter. The remake was Sylvester Stallone and what was the girl's name? Rachel Lee Cook, sorry.
No, I have not seen the original Get Carter. I also have not seen the original Alfie.
Ah, no, me either. I haven't seen either Alfie. I've seen both Get Carters, and they're different movies. I actually kind of like the Sylvester Stallone version because I forget who the director of that was, but it was all like MTV cutting and editing, but it was to pretty good effect, I think. But the original Get Carter is just Michael Caine being like a total badass, and that's what you get a little bit of in Harry Brown. Because he's not all cyber Cider House Rules and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
You should check out the Alfie remake for no other reason than the soundtrack.
Well, who is Jude Law play Alfie?
Yes.
Yeah, after seeing Gattaca and Side Effects, I think, I'll be happy to watch a Jude Law movie.
And Talented Mr. Ripley.
And Talented Mr. Ripley, absolutely.
Yeah, no, he's good in it.
Yeah. So, anyway. So, anything else? Any other housekeeping?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay. Any walkout lines?
Let's have a cup of tea, Mr. Hurst.
Yeah. Brutal. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.